In 10 months, Joseph went on with his narrative, the tree opened and revealed itself after this space of time, and lo, it was the lad Adonai who came forth. And Asherah, who had done all this, saw him and yielded him to no one. Therefore she kept him in the kingdom of the lower world, with Queen Ereshkigal. But she too, the queen, would yield him to no one, and said, Never will I give him up, for this is the land of nevermore return. Why then did these queens yield him to no one? To no one, neither to each other. Thou askest all, and will know all, but if one hath the power of inference, then one needeth to say but one thing, and the rest proceedeth from it. Adon was the son of the fair one, and Nana herself had a hand in his begetting, from which it followed that he was born to be occasion for envy. Thus, when the queen of the air appeared in the lower realms to ask for him, Queen Ereshkigal was affrighted in the depths of her soul, and clenched her teeth. She spoke to the gatekeeper, Deal with her according to custom. And thus Astarte, the queen, had to pass through the 7 gates, leaving behind at each a piece of her garments in the gatekeeper's hands, headcloth, draperies, girdle, and clasps, and at the last door the loincloth, so that she came naked before Queen Ereshkigal to ask for Tammuz. Then these mistresses made claws of their fingers and flew at each other.
They flew at each other with their nails?
Yes. One wound the other's hair round her hand and plucked at it, so great was their jealousy. But then Queen Ereshkigal had Queen Astarte locked in the lower regions with 60 locks and afflicted her with 60 diseases, so that the earth in vain awaited her return, and the shoots were imprisoned in the earth as the blossoms on the tree. At night the field grew white, for it bore salt. No grass sprung up, nor any grain grew. The bull no longer covered the cow, nor the ass the she-ass, nor man woman. The womb was closed. Life, forsaken by desire, lay numb in affliction.
Oh, Josephia, let us get on to the other hours of the tale, and speak no more of this. I cannot hear that the ass no longer crouched over the she-ass, and that the earth was leprous with salt. I shall weep, and thou wilt be troubled with me.
And God's messenger wept too when he saw it, said Joseph, and showed it weeping to the Lord of hosts. And he said, It is not good that the blossom should be imprisoned on the tree. I will throw myself into the breach. And he intervened between the queens Ashtaroth and Ereshkigal, and arranged that Adonai should spend 1/3 of the year in the lower regions, 1/3 on earth, and 1/3 where he himself chose. Then Ishtar led back her beloved to the upper earth.
But where did the shoot of the tree stay in 1/3 part of the year?
That is hard to tell. In various places. There was much jealousy of him, and many machinations of envy. Ashtaroth loved him, but more than one god led him astray, and yielded him to no one.
Gods made in man's image, and made like me? Asked Benjamin.
Made like thee. It is a phrase which everybody would understand, answered Joseph. But with gods and half-gods the thing is not so clear. For many call Tammuz not master but mistress, not lord but lady, by which they mean Nana the goddess, but at the same time the god who is with her. Or even they mean him instead of her. For indeed, is Ishtar a wife? I have seen pictures of her, and she had a beard.
So why do I not say, I saw pictures of him?
Jacob, our father, imagineth no picture. No doubt that is the wisest way. But we must speak, and often the clumsiness of our speech doth not serve the truth. Is Ishtar the morning star?
Yea, and the evening star as well.
So she is both. And I saw written upon a stone about her, At evening a woman, in the morning a man.
How could one make an image of that?
and what sort of words should one choose to express the truth? I saw an image of God, showing the water of Egypt that waters the fields, and its breast was half a woman's and half a man's. Perhaps Tammuz was a maiden, and became a youth only in death. Hath death, then, the power to alter nature? The dead is God. He is Tammuz the shepherd, who is called Adonis here, but Osiris in the underworld. There he hath twisted mustaches, even if he was a woman when alive.
Mommy's cheeks, so thou hast told me, were very soft, and smelled like a rose leaf when one kissed her. I will have no bearded image of her. If thou requirest it of me, I shall be rude and not comply.
Foolish child, answered Joseph, laughing, I require it not from thee. I am only telling thee of the people of the lower land, and their ideas concerning things not readily understood.
My chubby cheeks are soft and tender, too, Benjamin remarked,
and felt his cheeks with both his little palms. That cometh because I am not yet even what one could call young, but only a little urchin.
But thou art young, and therefore keepest thou thy face clean of beard until thou art a man.
Yea, I keep myself clean, answered Joseph, and thou art clean. Thou hast cheeks soft as were mommy's, tender as though thou wast still an angel of the Most High God, the Lord, who hath betrothed himself to our seed, and to whom the same is betrothed in the flesh through the bond of Abraham. For he is to us a bridegroom by the shedding of blood, full of ardor, and Israel is the bride. But then, is Israel a bride or a bridegroom? That is not readily understood, and one may make no image of it, for after all he is a bridegroom, circumcised for the bride, dedicate, and set apart. If I try to make a mental picture of Elohim, he looks like my father, who loveth me more than he doth our fellows. But I know that it is mommy whom he loveth in me, because I am living while she is dead, and liveth now in another nature. I and the mother are one. But Jacob, when he looketh on me, thinketh of Rachel, just as the people hereabouts think of Nana when they call Tammuz the queen.
I think of mommy, too, when I am tender with thee, Josephia, dear Jehoseph, Benjamin cried, and flung his arms about Joseph. Behold, that is the substitute and the representation, for our soft-cheeked mother went down to death for the sake of my life, and the little urchin is an orphan and ill-doer even from the first. But thou art to me like her. Thou leadest me by the hand to the grove, into the greenwood, into the wide world. Thou tellest me of the feast of God in all its hours as they pass, and makest me garlands as she would have done, even though, of course, thou wilt not grant me the wear of every sort of green, but keepest something for thyself alone. Woe, alas, that it had to come over her with such sharpness by the way, so that she had to die. Would she had been like the tree that sprang up and opened out so conveniently, and sent forth a shoot. What sort of tree saidst thou it was? My memory is as short as my legs and my little finger.
Come, let us go now, Joseph said. The Dream of Heaven. At that time the brothers had not yet begun to call him the Dreamer. That came a little later. At present they named him Utnapishtim, and Reader of Stones, and the mildness of these epithets, intended to give offense, shows the poverty of the brothers' imagination. They would gladly have called him worse if they could have thought of it, and so they were glad when they could take up the Dreamer of Dreams as having a little more edge. But that day was not yet come. His prattle to his father about the dream concerning the winter rains had not been enough to make them take notice of his presumption. Moreover, up till now he had not talked in their presence of his dreams, though he had had them for a long time. The tallest of them he never did tell, either to them or to his father. It was the relatively modest ones which he repeated, to his own undoing. But to Benjamin he told all. In their private hours he told his little brother even the most shameless ones. which otherwise he had the good sense to suppress. It goes without saying that the little urchin listened with all his ears, and heard with the utmost gratification, and that he never tired of asking to hear. But even so, weighed down as he already was by such mysterious doings as that of the myrtle garland, he never was able to get rid of a feeling of unease and anxiety as he listened, though he ascribed it to his own youngness and tried to overcome it. Unfortunately, there was far too good ground for the feeling. Probably nobody could have helped having some concern, in view of the rank egotism of the dream that follows, which Benjamin and Benjamin alone got to hear more than once. Precisely the circumstance that he was the only hearer oppressed the child no little, however much he recognized the necessity and felt honored by the fact. Joseph told his dream for the most part with his eyes closed, in a voice now dying away, now suddenly swelling forth, with his fists held clenched on his chest, plainly in a state of great emotion, though he warned his hearer not to be carried away, but to listen quietly. "Thou must not be startled," he said, "nor cry out. Thou must neither weep nor laugh, else will I not speak." "How should I?" Benjamin would answer each time. "I may be but a little urchin, but I am no simpleton. I know well what I shall do. So long as I feel quiet, I will forget that it is a dream, that I may enjoy it to the full. But so soon as I am frightened, or feel myself getting hot and cold, then I will tell myself that it is all a dream which thou art telling me, and that will cool my mood, that I make no disturbance."